A really big brown bear awakes from his afternoon nap, and he's lumbering out of his cave in the rocky-looking bluffs. Tossing his head back and forth, he pads his way into the sunshine and over to the water's edge. He puts a huge paw in the pool of water, testing it, and then splashes on in. To the approval of the crowd. This bear's cage at the St. Louis Zoo doesn't look much like a cage. When it was constructed in the 1920s, it was a marvel, way ahead of its time. Castings of nearby river bluffs were used as molds for the concrete enclosure. Visitors then and now get the idea that the bears are in a natural setting instead of sitting behind bars and cages. The 1920s bear pits in St. Louis were among the most early attempts to make zoo exhibits look a little more like where the animals lived. It was quite a jump from merely painting jungle scenes on a back wall. People liked the change and demanded more. Today, there's little doubt that zoos have changed along with public attitudes about the animals and their care. Once zoos were not much more than an entertainment attraction, a menagerie of odd-looking animals. Today, zoos are showing many of those animals in a much different light.
Today, the mission is focused more on conservation and education of the public.
Jill Anderson is with the firm International Concept Management. It's a contracting company hired to design and build realistic natural settings in zoos and museums. Anderson says as visitors become more well-informed about the environments of the world and the animals on display, they're demanding that the zoos offer more authenticity in the exhibits.
There's been a fairly significant shift over the last 15 to 20 years. Exhibit designers have immersed themselves in studying animal behavior in their natural habitat, trying to build attractions or exhibits, as it were, so that people view an animal in as close to a replication of its habitat in the wild.
Zoos have also responded to the environmental movement of the last 30 years. In fact, many of those environmentalists now have jobs at zoos. They're working to make the zoo more than a stationary circus. The zoos today want to be an educational institution that stresses the importance of conserving the habitat where some of those funny-looking animals originated. A whole industry has sprung up to manufacture those habitats. Companies offer zoos fake concrete and fiberglass trees and artificial vines strong enough for apes to use as swings. Christopher Foster works for Cost Incorporated. Cost got its start in 1957, putting artificial rocks in the Milwaukee County Zoo. He says building more natural-looking environments has come a long way since the sort of oddly angular-shaped boulders used back then.
A lot of the projects that we do are actually molded processes from natural rock formations found in various parts of a specific region or part of the world, and then that's replicated on site.
So the rock formations in an exhibit in an American zoo might have been made from castings in Namibia, or the tree in a gorilla exhibit might come from latex molds of a tree in Congo. Foster says a lot of thought can go into how the exhibits appear, and the best designers will think about how the animals will use the space. But the real trick is to lure people into a state of mind that makes them forget for a moment that they're in a city zoo.
Not many are going to go to the African plains in their life. So what we do is we actually bring that feel to their local zoo.
And that's the whole point of this industry, to bring the feel of the African savanna to St. Louis or Chicago or Buffalo. Some of the companies go to great lengths to capture that look. Andrew Anderson is with Chemrock Landscapes. He says he spent days underwater studying marine life and worked with artists to copy small samples of vines and leaves and bark, turning them into an imitation of nature. He says the process is a little bit of science and a lot of the artist's eye for details.
The art here is being able to replicate nature in such a way so that you can't tell which is the real and which is the fabricated item. Now, of these three monkey pod vines, one of them is real and two are fabricated. Show me the real one.
Well, I'm guessing it's the middle one.
No.
No.
This one. These vines were a combination of the real thing and some sculpture. Because we only had a small piece, these had to be 12 to 24 feet long. So there's some improvisation there.
All of that study and improvisation comes with a price. Sometimes it runs into the tens of millions of dollars for an exhibit. But zoos have felt public pressure to move animals from bars and cages into more open displays. Never mind that the climate won't support the animal's original habitat or the trees aren't there. When the paying public wants it, the zoos work to provide it. So trees and streams and landscape foreign to the U.S. become home to captive elephants, big cats, and apes. Richard Lattice is with the Wildlife Conservation Society, which operates the Bronx Zoo. He says zoos have little choice but to resort to artificial settings.
You know, it would not behoove us to go and cut down a giant rainforest tree. It's sort of contrary to what we're all about, and bring it back here and put it into an exhibit. On the other hand, we can create realistic-looking trees with fiberglass and plexiglasses and various things like that. So I'm not at all ashamed that I've created at the Congo Gorilla exhibit in the Bronx an artificial tree for the gorillas to play on, but to be honest with you, right next to it's a real one. So it's a little of both.
So artificial banyan trees and synthetic vines combining with real ficus plants and North American trees blend into a stage for the animals, a stage where the players feel a little more at home and the audience gets a better appreciation for the importance of the wild places in the world where many of these animals are struggling for survival. For the Great Lakes Radio Consortium, this is Lester Graham.